A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been reading municipal sign codes again. This time he's asking about Mansfield, Connecticut, where the town will actually pay part of the cost of a sign for your property, but only one specific kind, and only because the fire department got tired of driving past houses they couldn't find. He wants to know how far the spectrum runs, from that very sensible subsidized house number to the most unhinged thing a person can legally bolt into the ground to announce themselves. Could you put up your own billboard? What would it cost to build something visible from a plane? And if you're working with either an Amazon gift card or a Saudi sovereign wealth fund, what's the most outlandish way to leave your mark on a piece of land?
I grew up in Storrs, which is the next town over from Mansfield. You could walk from one to the other and not notice the border unless you looked at the street signs. So when Daniel sent this one, I thought, oh good, finally, a prompt about my actual childhood. And then I read the actual code and realized I never once noticed any of it.
That's the thing about good regulation. You only notice it when it's gone.
Mansfield Sign Ordinance is on E-code 3060, which is where every small Connecticut town parks its zoning code so nobody has to go to town hall and ask for a binder. It's genuinely strict. There are size caps, setback requirements, elimination rules, all of it. You want to put a sign on your own front lawn, there's a maximum square footage and a maximum height and a list of places it can't be. But buried in the same code, there's a carve-out for emergency address signs, and the town will subsidize them. Because if your sign code is so strict that people can't put up a big reflective number at the end of their driveway, the fire department can't find the house when the house is on fire.
So the town created a problem and then invented a government program to solve it.
That's one read. The other read is that the town decided the collective benefit of not having every lawn look like a used car lot was worth the cost of buying everyone a standardized number sign. It's the same logic as streetlights. You don't let everyone install their own floodlight pointed at the road. You put up consistent municipal lighting and everyone pays for it through taxes.
It's the homeowners association impulse at the level of civil government. Which, fine, Connecticut. But Daniel's actual question is bigger. How does this scale? What happens when you take the logic of Mansfield and stretch it to the point where it breaks?
Let's start with the billboard question, because that's the one where most people's intuition is wrong. In the United States, you generally can put up a billboard on your own property. You don't need to be a billboard company. You need to be in a zone that allows it, which usually means commercial or industrial, and you need permits. And you need to comply with whatever state and federal rules apply. But the right itself exists. The obstacle is the Highway Beautification Act of 1965, which is a spectacular piece of federal leverage. Congress said, if you want federal highway money, you have to control billboards along your interstates. And every state fell in line because losing highway funding over a sign isn't a trade any governor wants to make.
So the federal government didn't ban billboards. It just made states an offer they couldn't refuse.
And that's why you see billboards clustered in certain spots and absent from others. It's not that the landowner in the empty stretch didn't want one. It's that the state said no because the feds were holding the purse strings. The First Amendment is the other pressure. Courts have repeatedly struck down sign bans as free speech violations. A town can't just say no signs, full stop. It has to have a compelling reason and a narrowly tailored rule. So sign regulation in the U.S. is this three-way tug between property rights, free speech, and the government's interest in not having the highway look like a carnival.
What about the rest of the world? Daniel asked about different countries.
Japan is the extreme case. Some districts have what amounts to a near-total ban on freestanding signs. The aesthetic control is baked into the culture. You don't get to put a 40-foot inflatable gorilla on your roof in Kyoto. It's not a negotiation. Meanwhile, in parts of the developing world, the problem is the opposite. There's so little enforcement that the signage becomes the landscape. You drive through certain cities, and the buildings disappear behind layers of advertising. It's the same physical act, putting a sign on a building, but the regulatory frame changes everything about what the street looks like.
So the spectrum runs from Mansfield, where the town buys you a standardized sign, to places where nobody has bought anyone a sign, and also nobody has stopped anyone from putting up anything.
And in between, you get the loophole artists. Political signs get broader protection in the US, especially near elections. Temporary signs often slip through because enforcement is complaint-driven, and by the time someone complains, the sign is down. And the art exemption has been used to erect massive pieces that function as signage but are technically sculpture. There's a whole genre of person who wants a billboard, gets told no, and then puts up a 40-foot steel rectangle and calls it a sculpture about the color blue.
The Marina Abramovich approach to advertising.
I'm not sure she'd love that comparison, but yes. The point is, the regulation creates the loophole. The stricter the code, the more creative the workaround. Mansfield's code is strict, so someone in Mansfield has almost certainly spent a weekend figuring out whether their political sign counts as temporary or whether their giant rooster statue counts as art.
Now let's take the logic of audacity to its extreme. What does it actually cost to be seen from a plane?
This is where the numbers get fun. At cruising altitude, 30,000 feet and up, you need letters roughly 50 feet tall or more. That's not a sign, that's a construction project. At 1,000 feet, which is helicopter or approach altitude, 10 to 15 foot letters might do it. But the jump from 15 feet to 50 feet isn't a linear cost increase. It's the difference between a billboard and a building.
So what's the bill?
A standard billboard, the thing you see along the interstate, runs $5,000 to $50,000 to fabricate and install, depending on size and lighting and whether it's digital. The Hollywood sign, for scale, is 45 feet tall and 450 feet long. That was originally a real estate advertisement, and it was built in 1923 for about $21,000, which is somewhere north of $350,000 today. But that's just the letters. The structural engineering, the permits, the fight with the city, the maintenance, you're into the hundreds of thousands at minimum, and easily millions if you want it to light up or survive a windstorm.
And the Hollywood sign is now a protected landmark. So the audacity won.
That's the knock-on effect Daniel's really poking at. When signage becomes a landmark, the regulatory calculus flips. The world's largest thermometer in Baker, California is 134 feet tall. It was built by a businessman in the 90s to draw people off the highway to his restaurant. It's now the thing the town is known for. It's protected. It's a tourist attraction. The town didn't tear it down. They put it on the brochure. So the question isn't just what you can legally build, it's what you can build that becomes so beloved or so notorious that the law has to catch up.
That's the Baker strategy. Build something so big that tearing it down would be an act of civic self-harm.
And it works more often than you'd think. The FAA has cited private property owners for illuminated signs that interfere with aviation. If you put up a light that mimics an airport beacon, or something bright enough to distract a pilot on approach, the federal government will find you. But if you build a 100-foot thermometer and it becomes the town's identity, the town will defend you. The line between nuisance and landmark isn't in the code, it's in the public's affection.
What about the budget end? Daniel mentioned scouring Amazon.
The enforcement lottery. You can buy an LED projector on Amazon for under $100 that will throw a visible message onto the side of your house or a tree or a rock face. You can buy inflatable displays, temporary banners, all of it technically violates most sign codes, but the cost of the fine, if you even get one, is often less than the cost of compliance. Most towns only act on complaints. So if your neighbors don't call, your $100 projector is effectively legal. The expected cost of the fine is maybe $40. The expected cost of a permit and a compliant sign is maybe $2,000. The rational actor buys the projector.
That's the most American sentence you've said all episode. The rational actor buys the projector.
And then there's the middle class of audacity. The person who doesn't want to fight the FAA but does want to be seen from the road. That's where you get the giant fiberglass animals, the 20-foot cowboy, the concrete dinosaurs. These are technically signs, in the sense that they're designed to draw attention to a business, but they're also technically sculptures, and the ambiguity is the point. The code says sign, the owner says art, and the town council has to decide whether they want to be the people who tore down the dinosaur.
I want to go back to Mansfield for a second, because there's a detail in Daniel's prompt that I think is the actual heart of this. The town restricts signs to the point where they can't rely on you having a visible address marker, so they buy you one. That's an admission that the regulation has a cost. It's not free to have a tidy streetscape. Somebody has to pay for the emergency response gap.
And it's a very Connecticut solution. We'll regulate the aesthetics, but we'll also make sure the fire truck can find you, because the fire truck not finding you is a problem that gets worse the stricter the code is. You could imagine a town that says no signs and then just accepts that emergency response times go up. Mansfield didn't do that. They built the subsidy into the code. It's honestly kind of elegant.
It's the same logic as a tax credit for something the government made more expensive. We made it hard to do the thing, so we'll pay you to do the thing we actually want you to do.
And the thing they actually want you to do is be findable, which is, when you strip it down, what all signage is for. It's a way of saying, I'm here, this is mine, come find me. The Mansfield emergency sign is the purest form of that. No advertising, no self-expression, just a number and a reflective background. Here's the address. Find it.
So what's the most outlandish thing someone has actually done? Not the theoretical maximum, the real thing.
The Baker thermometer is the canonical example. 134 feet tall, visible from the highway and from the air, built by a guy who wanted to sell date shakes. It's now a protected landmark. That's the full arc from audacity to civic asset. But there's also the private light display phenomenon. People with enough land and enough money will put up displays visible from flight paths. Not signs, technically, just lights. And the FAA has cited people for it. There's a legal gray zone around illuminated private displays that mimic airport beacons or create confusion for pilots. The FAA's authority over navigable airspace is federal and it's broad. So the moment your sign becomes an aviation issue, you're not dealing with the town council anymore. You're dealing with a federal agency that doesn't care about your date shakes.
The sky isn't your property. That's the hard ceiling.
It's an interesting legal line. You own the dirt. You own a reasonable amount of the air above the dirt for ordinary use. But navigable airspace is federal, so a 50-foot sign is probably fine. A 500-foot sign is a hazard to air navigation. Somewhere in between is the line. And it's not in the zoning code, it's in FAA regulations and case law.
If you have the resources to do something truly incredible, the constraint isn't money, it's airspace. And the strategy isn't to comply. It's to become a landmark before anyone can stop you.
That's the Baker playbook. Build it fast, make it beloved, and let the regulators discover that tearing it down would be worse for them than leaving it up. It doesn't always work, but when it works permanently. The Hollywood sign was supposed to last 18 months. It's been there 100 years.
100 years of a temporary real estate sign. That's the most inspiring thing I've heard all week.
It's also a reminder that the line between sign and landmark is time. A sign is temporary by definition. A landmark is a sign that outlived its original purpose and got adopted by the public. Mansfield's emergency signs will never be landmarks. They're too standardized, too functional. But the Baker thermometer, that's a sign that became a place.
The answer to Daniel's question, could you put up your own billboard, is yes, with caveats. The answer to what it costs to be seen from a plane is more than a house, less than a jet. And the answer to what's the most outlandish thing you can do is whatever you can build fast enough and beloved enough that the town decides your infrastructure.
The answer to what Mansfield tells us is that regulation isn't just restriction, it's also subsidy. The same town that says no to your inflatable gorilla will buy you a reflective number so the fire department can find you. That's the whole tension in one town.
Speaking of signs that shouldn't have gone up, Hilbert, you've been making a face since the billboard talk started.
1998. I worked a summer for a sign company in New Britain. We built a 40-foot illuminated sign for a used car dealership on the Berlin Turnpike. Took us 3 weeks. The owner wanted his name in letters so big you could read them from the next town. We told him it was over the height limit. He said, put it up anyway. So we put it up. It stood for 18 months. Nobody complained. Not the town, not the neighbors, not the guy across the street with the diner. Then one day, a new zoning enforcement officer started and drove down the turnpike and saw it and wrote a citation. The dealer had to pay to take it down. Cost him more to remove it than it cost to build it. The Mansfield thing, the subsidized address signs, that reminds me of the volunteer fire department in my hometown. They used to hand out reflective house numbers for free. Just a box of them at the firehouse. Because they kept missing houses on night calls. You'd be surprised how many people don't have a visible number. They'd drive past the house 3 times and then just start knocking on doors. The dealer, after the sign came down, he painted the whole side of his building. Same message, same colors, just painted directly on the cinder block. The town couldn't touch it. It was a mural. He called it a mural. The zoning guy was furious. But you can't regulate a painting the same way you regulate a sign. The code said, sign, and a mural isn't a sign, it's art.
The dealer found the art exemption, and the town had to eat it.
He found the art exemption, and the town had to eat it. I still have a photo of the original sign somewhere. It was a beautiful sign. Shame it only lasted 18 months.
That's the loophole in action. The code defines what a sign is, and the moment you step outside the definition, the code doesn't apply. A mural isn't a sign. A sculpture isn't a sign. A painted building isn't a sign. The regulators write the definition, and the audacious read the definition and find the gap.
The gap is where the landmarks get built.
The gap is where the landmarks get built. The used car dealer didn't get a landmark, he got a mural. But it's the same move. Don't fight the code, just step around it.
The diner guy across the street, he was mad for a different reason. He said the dealer's sign was so bright it kept him up at night. 18 months of that. He never complained either, just closed his blinds and seethed. Some people would rather be right than be rid of the thing.
That's the enforcement lottery in one anecdote. 18 months of seething and nobody picked up the phone.
The town only acts when someone makes them. That's the whole system. No complaint, no enforcement. The code is strict, but the code is asleep until someone wakes it up.
That's the second order insight. The strictness of the code matters less than the willingness of the neighbors to complain. Mansfield can write the most detailed sign ordinance in Connecticut, but if nobody calls, the inflatable gorilla stays up. The subsidy program works because it's proactive. The town doesn't wait for a complaint to hand out reflective numbers. It just does it. That's the difference between regulation that works and regulation that waits.
The future question is, what happens when the technology gets cheaper? LED projectors are already under $100. Drone displays are getting more accessible. The gap between what you can technically do and what the code says you can do is widening every year. At some point, the enforcement lottery stops being a lottery and becomes a market.
The rational actor buys the projector. And the rational regulator writes a new code. And the rational, audacious person finds a new gap. It's an arms race, and the arms are getting cheaper on both sides.
The misconception I want to clear up is the idea that you can put up your own billboard. You generally can, in the right zone with the right permits. The obstacle isn't a blanket ban. It's a thicket of conditions. And the second misconception, that sign codes are purely aesthetic. Mansfield's emergency sign program proves they're also about public safety. The town restricts signs and then pays for the one sign it actually needs you to have.
The third one, that the audacious signs always get taken down. The Baker thermometer is 134 feet tall and it's protected. The Hollywood sign was temporary and it's 100 years old. Sometimes the audacity wins and the code has to rewrite itself around the landmark.
The open question for me is the drone thing. If you can rent a swarm of drones and spell your name in the sky for $1,000 a night, does the sign code even apply? The drones aren't on your property. They're not permanent. They're not even a sign, technically. But the effect is the same. You're announcing yourself to everyone in a 5-mile radius. The regulators haven't caught up to that yet.
When they do, it'll be the FAA again, because drones are airspace. So the future of signage regulation is going to be federal, not municipal. The town council won't be the one deciding whether your drone display is legal. It'll be the FAA and the FCC and whatever new acronym they invent for the problem. The local sign code will become a relic.
The Mansfield emergency sign will still be there, reflective and standardized, doing exactly what it was designed to do, which is, in its own way, a kind of landmark.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing. And for the used car mural story, which I'll be thinking about for the rest of the day.
This has been my Weird Prompts. If you want to send us your own municipal code discoveries, email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon. Go read your local zoning code. It's more interesting than you think.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.